This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Everybody loves a good story, so today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we thought we'd change things up a bit and bring you a few stories from around the country and overseas to see how educators are helping their students and communities. First, a trip to Niagara Falls to see how their schools have made STEM education a priority.
If you can't figure out how to do a problem, this helps you with your problem-solving skills.
Then we'll head out west to Wyoming and visit a very special poetry class that's helping students find the words to say the things they think they cannot say. Finally, it's a trip overseas to Mumbai, where a teacher is using soccer to help students escape the slums. And of course, we'll end spending an academic minute trying to outsmart whooping cough. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. The Niagara Falls City School District has made an impressive investment to implement STEM programs in every one of its schools. In this Focus on Education report from Station WBFO, Eileen Buckley toured the Niagara Falls High School, where students were breaking in brand new STEM labs.
Niagara Falls High School students were researching websites, trying to determine if information was credible. It may seem like a simple task, but this lesson involved plagiarism. They're learning that when writing scientific research papers, it's important to make sure they're not simply lifting material from websites without fact-checking and attribution.
This is very college level, so we are finding that they're listening, and I think a lot of this information is like very new to them.
Bana Chowdhury is the STEM bioscience lead instructor at the high school. This research class is one of the many science, technology, engineering, and math programs taught at the school.
We have, you know, purposefully and like intentionally put these things into place because this is something that they're going to use to be able to do the work that we have set up.
As students conduct this coursework in the classroom setting, just a few feet away is one of the brand new stem cell labs created for actual research projects.
And we have four very exciting units that we have planned for this year. They are sustainability, cancer, and traumatic brain injuries, as well as the biosciences, where the students are going to learn about nutrition, they're going to learn about cardiology, and we have specifically selected topics that are very relevant to the kids' lives.
This gives a little more flexibility and gets them ready for the actual job.
Denise Karski is a co-instructor in biosciences. She's a math teacher and will work with students to integrate math into their science projects.
Get these kids ready for some of the things that they may use in an actual workplace, like, you know, using Excel spreadsheets, using, technology.
Karski admits Common Core is difficult for some inner city students, but STEM is helping them learn concepts.
You know, we're rising, you know, to the occasion, and we're raising, you know, the expectations, and hopefully they're gonna rise to them.
Here we are doing hands-on work, doing group work, learning how to work with other people, being able to solve tasks.
Sierra Spain is a junior at Niagara Falls High School.
Because not only is it beneficial, but I'm actually interested. Generally, when you take courses, they're not really things you'd like to take. And this is something I've always been interested in, such as science and math, and I think it is very beneficial to my learning.
I think the STEM class teaches kids a new way of learning. It's not like a regular class and out of book reading.
Michael Saunders is also a junior at the high school. He says STEM is making him think differently.
For example, if you're in your math class or a different science class, if you can't figure out how to do a problem, this helps you with your problem solving skills, which can help you in other courses.
I want to go into science and stuff.
Freshman Rochelle Hilton is excited and nervous to be at a new school, but she attended a STEM camp over the summer.
And I really liked it. We did different types of things. We made solar. We worked with like solar energy. We made like ovens and stuff. And we burned things to see, like, we burned like cheese and different types of like food to see like the calories of things.
There is a newly constructed applied innovation lab at the high school focusing on engineering. Valerie Rotella Zavuto is a science instructor for the lab. She says students have quickly engaged in the STEM program.
I think they struggle with relevance, just trying to, you know, figure out what we're learning in the classroom and how we can apply it to the real world. But this class is designed to do just that. So how can we take the math, how can we take the science, and now how can we use it in the real world?
We're going to throw them right into the creation process where they're going to learn the math and they're going to learn the science, but they're going to learn it because they're applying it, not so much because we're teaching them a lesson on it.
Amy Kilmer is lead instructor teaching math.
Where do the students that you can see struggle the most when it comes to math?
I think kids struggle the most because they want to see the application of it. So they're reluctant to learn it in the beginning because they feel like, why do I have to learn it? Why do you have it in the curriculum? So if we have the opportunity to tell them this is where they're going to learn it, so let's learn it now, I think the reluctance to learn it would end because now they could see why they're learning it.
STEM construction continues at other Niagara Falls schools. City School Superintendent Cynthia Bianco says they're the only district in the state that's been dedicated to constructing STEM classrooms in all of its schools.
We're really getting into the 21st century. We look at technology as being a great leveler for our students because this is a pretty poor area, pretty poor city. So we try to level the playing field for our children by offering them the best that we can in education and technology in education. STEM classrooms complement that effort.
We try to think about what we would need for the future, what our students should be exposed to.
Lynn Tompkins is STEM coordinator for the district and also serves as house principal at the Niagara Falls High School.
We want to give them every opportunity that any other child would have. What's neat is we're on the front end of the curve here. Nobody else is really doing it like this. So our students have state-of-the-art from the start.
The Niagara Falls School District began STEM construction in 2012. It's a more than $66 million capital project called Inventing Tomorrow, and it's already inspiring students. Eileen Buckley, WBFO News.
Most Mondays, a group of poets has taken over a classroom in an alternative high school in Kelloggsville, Wyoming. The poets are part of a collective based in West Michigan known as the Diatribe. The class they teach isn't for credit, and students there aren't there to learn the elements of poetry. They're not assigned sonnets, and they're not expected to learn iambic pentameter. This class is about something different. From Michigan Radio's State of Opportunity series, Dustin Dwyer reports.
Can you read right now, at least, please?
Fable is harassing one of his students.
Can you at least read in front of us
six? It's been a whole year.
The student, Jocelyn, already said she doesn't want to read her poem. She hardly ever speaks at all in this class. But Fable, whose given name is Marcel Price, he will not let up.
I won't ask you for anything ever again throughout me knowing you through the rest of my life, but you will literally make this semester worth it. If I could just hear you read your poem.
Ooh, it brings the pressure hard.
Fable is one of the teachers of this class, one out of four members of the Diatribe here today. The others are Rachel Gleason, G. Foster II, and Sean Moore. They all pile on Jocelyn, the only student here today who hasn't yet read a poem out loud.
Please.
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 Please. Finally, Jocelyn digs a folded piece of white notebook paper out of her backpack. She has long dark hair, dyed blue at the ends. She's wearing a black Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt. Everyone else in the room turns their heads. They promise not to look as she reads her poem.
Do I really have to? Really? Alright. Your body is your temple. You're not supposed to leave cuts, burns, or any marks just to ease the ache you feel in your chest. You're supposed to decorate it with pretty makeup or new jewelry or painted nails and tattoos. I know what it's like to feel numb and empty and like the whole world hates you. What it's like to pick up that blade and cut so deep until you can't feel anymore.
Jocelyn collects herself. The paper trembles in her hand as she continues. We don't have time here to play the full poem, but I will tell you that when she finished, every single person in that room was blown away.
There
Jocelyn is still crying, and she leaves the room to collect herself.
I'm so proud of you.
Sean Moore and G. Foster are trying to collect themselves, too.
That's what it's about right there.
I've never heard her talk that much in one sitting, ever.
I don't think I've ever heard 12 words from her.
No.
And we've been here 15 weeks. I was like...
She let us have it with that poem, man.
These poets are not traditional teachers, not even close. This class started a few years ago. It was originally supposed to be just one visit, a kind of career day with local poets. They were such a hit with students, it turned into a weekly thing here. Their lessons aren't about haikus or villanelles. They're about inner demons and social justice. One week focused on rape culture. Another week, they ask students to read the comments at the bottom of a news story and write a poem about it. Members of the Daya tribe, they still travel around to other schools, giving assemblies to large groups of students. And Fable says the approach there is the same as it always is, to push students and help them say the things they think they cannot say.
To really get people to talk about their demons, though, and that's really, like, especially with, like, the exercises that we do in assemblies, like you're going to have, in a room of 600, you're going to have 50 to 100 kids talking about self-harm is the demon that they're letting out. You're going to have 20 to 50 kids that are talking about, they're like, oh, I'm in the closet. You're going to have half these kids talking about they're contemplating suicide. You're going to have half these kids struggling with their parents. Like, that's abuse. Right, and abuse. Sexual like, abuse. And that's the thing, is that's not the school system. Like, it's people not being taught how to cope with their stressors. I mean, it's every
PTSD,
single
PTSD.
It's every school you go to. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's inner city, out of city, at risk, not at risk. It doesn't matter what it is. It's all the kids.
The human condition.
Jocelyn's story doesn't end with a poem about razor blades. When she comes back in the room, Fable gives her a big hug. He lifts her off the ground.
Rockstar.
He tells her he went through the same things. Sean Moore went through the same things. Then each of these four poets read their own deeply personal, powerful poems to the students. Afterward, I go talk to Jocelyn.
What do you think about these knuckleheads?
They're pretty neat. They're really cool people.
And so even though they make you read poetry, you don't want to read?
Yeah, I guess.
So tell me just about this class compared to, like, the rest of your day at school.
I definitely look forward to it, but it's only once a week, so.
You feel like you're getting out, like, what you want from the rest of school?
I mean, yes, but no.
Well, like, where do you see yourself, like, 10 years from now? Like, what's the point? Like, what are you doing? What do you want to do?
I definitely want to get into art more, like, writing and drawing. I don't know.
And then, like, what's your plan? Are you think you're going to go to college, or do you think you're just
going
to go to work?
I'm definitely going to college. I want to take 1 year off to, like, save up for everything, then hit up a community college, and then once I get my basic credits, go to, like, a bigger college and do what I want.
Like, go to a college to do art stuff?
Maybe not.
Maybe you want, maybe what else?
I really want to be a doctor.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know, because... I just want to be something people remember.
Fable says to me after this that the students who are here in an alternative high school are not here because they are dumb. They are here because someone gave up on them, and then they gave up on their education. Poetry will not help Jocelyn become a doctor, but it has already helped her be something people remember. With State of Opportunity, I'm Dustin Dwyer.
Still to come, we'll head to Mumbai, where a teacher is using soccer to help educate children living in poverty. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to the Best of Our Knowledges podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Ashok Rathod is convinced that soccer is the best way to give kids growing up in the slums a second chance on life. And he should know, he grew up in a Mumbai slum himself and knows exactly which problems the kids there face. Committed to making a difference, Ashok founded the Oscar Foundation in 2006. The team organizes soccer practices and matches for young people, but also provides an education program aimed at giving school dropouts basic literacy skills. Sanjay Fernandez reports from Mumbai.
Mumbai's Ambedkar Nagar slums are a world away from the city's smog and traffic. The cramped alleys are stacked with one-room dwellings that sleep on average around seven people. 50,000 people live in this particular slum, making it one of the most densely populated areas in India. It's a place that seems to foster a cycle of poverty and addiction. 24-year-old Ashok Rathod remembers growing up in the slum.
From my childhood, I saw many of my good friends, they drop out of school, they involved in a fishing community, and they were earning money very easily. In 1 hour, they earn money $2 to $3, and 15 years back, that money was huge. And they don't know how to use that money. So they spend that money for gambling, drinking, smoking in a 10 to 12 age. Then their parents thought that their children going out of their hand, put them more responsibility. In 17, 18 age, they all got married and they totally drop out of school. And now they are 23, 24 years old and they have 2-3 children. So this cycle was going on same.
It was a cycle Ashok wanted to break. So in 2006, at just 18 years of age, he started the Oscar Foundation football program. The foundation's motto is education with a kick, and Ashok's vision is to empower young people to make a change. But why did he choose football in a country of cricket fanatics?
You required only one football, and 22 players can be moved at a time, actively. So this is the power of football, teamwork, leadership, respect, communication. My only thought was in my mind to, through footballs, I'll bring these children together and share them about my friend's story, about my story, so they can easily connect their future and they can complete their education.
Very good, good pass, nice one, come on boys, keep it up. Very good.
I'm at an Oscar football clinic in a public park in downtown Mumbai. 75 kids have caught the public bus not far from the slum, and they assemble on the ground and separate into their respective teams. It's clear that the most dedicated players are part of the under-14 girl squad. Pooja is their star striker.
My name is Pooja Pramod Dhavre. I live in RCH. I'm in 9th standard in St. Joseph High School. When I'm playing from 2 years, my age is 13. I have gone to Nagpur to play for Maharashtra. We have won 5 match, and when we are playing semi-final, we have lose. I like to play in striker.
Who's your favorite striker?
Ronaldo.
For Ashok, the greatest challenge has been integrating girls into the Oscar Foundation. It is a difficult task in a socially conservative community where young girls are expected to complete chores and earn money for their families even before their education. Ashok explains.
It took us 4 years to convince parents to allow the girls to play football. And these girls, you see, these girls wait whole week for 2 hours because in that this week they didn't get opportunity to express their time, energy, their smile, whole on the ground, they forget everything. That 2 hours they enjoy full.
Now there are about 350 kids from the Ambedkar Nagar colony participating in the Oscar Foundation football program, which is based on 3 separate pillars. A weekly football clinic for slum children, an education program aimed at giving school dropouts basic literacy skills, And also a Young Ambassadors program which identifies leaders among the slum youth and trains them to be coaches and mentors. 20-year-old coach Kumar has benefited from each of these three initiatives.
It's a great platform for me and it's a good changes in my life. That time I cannot speak in English. Now I can talk in English little bit. Basic in office, we are coming and collecting comics, books. We are reading every day using laptops. That's what's increasing.
The Oscar Foundation has also managed to get resources from sponsors like FIFA. With the money, the foundation can buy not only footballs, but also computers and other equipment for their education program. And not only are the kids doing well in school, they're also getting to be very competitive football players, says Ashok.
We have very good players and other academies want them. They are playing in very good position. They're getting scholarship, like education scholarship and then food and all.
Who'd have thought that a ball could have had such an impact? This is Sanjay Fernandez for DW in Mumbai.
When battling a case of whooping cough, sometimes you just have to outthink it. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Doctors are getting closer to wiping out whooping cough. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. And today on the Academic Minute, Jennifer Maynard, associate professor of chemical engineering at the University of Texas at Austin, discusses her work creating antibodies to treat the disease.
In the 1930s, whooping cough, or pertussis, was the most common cause of death for infants in the United States. The introduction of vaccines reduced this dramatically, but in recent years, the disease has become more common. More cases were documented in 2012 than in the prior 60 years. Even worse, by the time pertussis is diagnosed, antibiotics are often not effective and there are no other specific treatments. During infection, the Bordetella pertussis bacteria first infect the lungs, then grow while secreting a large number of toxins. Antibiotics do not affect the toxins, and these are responsible for the severe symptoms of disease, such as violent coughing. The toxins cause huge numbers of white blood cells to migrate into the blood, clogging the lungs and other organs. They also paralyze the immune system so it cannot kill the bacteria or remove toxins from the body. Infants who become ill either haven't been vaccinated or haven't had time to develop their own immune responses to the vaccine. So that's where we come in. We created an artificial immune response in the lab. We engineered two antibodies to tightly bind and inactivate the key toxin produced in pertussis. One antibody prevents the toxin from binding human cells. The other blocks its enzymatic activity. Injecting these antibodies into a sick infant could provide instant immunity to pertussis. In animal models, the antibodies halted progression of the disease and allowed for a much faster recovery. Whooping cough continues to cause disease in spite of widespread vaccination. By creating artificial immunity, we can help infants and learn how to outsmart this bacteria.
That was Jennifer Maynard of the University of Texas at Austin. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.